Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
With us on the line now is actor and voiceover artist Jonathan Kidd to talk about the unpublished memoirs of his father, which he found in his mum's loft, which he edited and got published. His father was the late Sam Kidd, who holds the record for the most film appearances by a British actor, appearing in more than 290 movies. Sir Michael Parkinson said of Sam, he made more films than the MGM Lion. He received the This Is Your Life Big Red Book from Eamon Andrews in 1974, and Sky TV's Talking Pictures dedicated a day to him in 2018. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Lovely to be on. Thank you so much for having me, Hannah.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's lovely to have you with us. So when you found these memoirs in your mum's loft, did you know that he'd started writing them, or was it a complete surprise?
Well, I remember that he'd written an autobiography, which never got published. He initially wrote a book called For You, the War is Over, which was about his being a prisoner of war, because he was in Poland and Germany for 5 years, which he published. He had a publisher, and he sold 40,000 copies of that. He was a very decent, funny writer.
Wow.
But I knew that he'd then failed to get this autobiography published, but I read a bit of it, and I'm afraid other things were happening in my life. I was at college and, you know, whatever. So it sort of got forgotten. And then when my mother died, I was clearing out the house, and in the loft, I found this copy of the autobiography, and I thought, well, I'll read it, and I attempted to go through it and stick it into a passable word processing document, and failed. Because I was scanning it was all written with Tippex corrections, and anyway, I went through it manfully and thought, actually, I can see why it wasn't published. It's not very good, because the major problem with it was that he didn't want to offend anybody, written because he was still alive. So everybody was, I loved working with them. They were great fun. And he was a good chap. And then I was thinking, oh, well, that's interesting to know. So there was no jeopardy in it at all. But it just so happened that left in the loft, my mother had left all his archive. I mean, quite remarkable amount of material, all their letters. There was even a desk, which was as when he died, which she hadn't ever gone into, which had his joke book, hundreds of letters, and in the boxes in the loft, masses of scripts, bizarrely, betting slips. He was a big horse racing man that he'd written jokes on, or he'd written just observations about people. So I had this abundance of material, and I thought, well, I think I know what I'll do. I'll see if I can make some of this book a bit better. But when he said things like, he worked with Harry Secombe really early on, who was in the Goons, of course, he was very friendly with, and he'd write in the book, did a fantastic sketch with Harry. And you're going, Father, what was the sketch? Father, for goodness sake, what was it? Doesn't read very well. What are you doing? But then luckily in the joke book, he's written sketch I did with Harry Secombe.
Oh.
And so I've just taken it out and stuck it in. And he was on 4 month tour with Harry Secombe after the war. He went to Germany and they performed in a sketch show that was written by somebody else people may remember, Dennis Norden, who of course became a great...
Yes.
Knowledge. So what we're dealing with, for people who don't know this, is my father was from 1945 to 82, was already, he evolved into a top celebrity and actor. But this was in an era when there were only two channels, of course. So, you know, in 1963, he was in a series called Crane, where he played, it was a smuggling character played by Patrick Allen. He played his sidekick, watched by 20 million people a week. Two channels. Gosh. So consequently, he was mobbed in the street, my dad. I was alive then. And he was, people would come up. What I loved about my father being, well, mobbed, people would come up and they'd say, "Hey, it's Sam. Oh, Sam. Hello, Sam." People would come up and shake his hand and say, "You've given me a great deal of pleasure. Thank you very much."
Aww.
It was, which I loved, I have to say. But it's only once again in hindsight, because the big thing about this whole experience was I've discovered a mass about my dad I didn't know, because I was being a boy. I mean, I wasn't alive for a large part of this period, but I was also being at school and playing football and playing cricket, which I have to say he was great at doing, my dad. He was just such a fantastic dad. And he's everything that that he loved, I love, you know, which is essentially football and cricket and, you know, going to the theatre and doing and just stuff that was mostly sporty. He was a very sporty man. Yeah. But also his career, what this book is about, this is the first 7 years of his career, a period in which he made 119 films, and I've got a mass of them in there, and I've added them in because I've got his accounts, I've got little stories about them that he didn't write in, but also the crux of the core of the autobiography is a mass of experiences working with top directors. So they've stayed in, obviously, because I've just added to the book, you know, I've just padded it out into making it into a better read. Mm. And also in a few instances saying, you know, if I knew that an actor, he didn't like an actor, and he said in the book, you know, he was nice, and I've thought, no, you didn't like him at all. We used to watch television together, and somebody would come on and he'd go, like, David Tomlinson. He loved David Tomlinson, you know, from Mary Poppins.
Yes.
And he'd say, "Oh, David, if he was in something, he's a lovely man. He's played the dad in Mary Poppins. He's a lovely man." They were in a film called Up the Creek together, and the very first Carry On. There wasn't actually a Carry On. And so there's a consequence, you know, he would say, "I love him." Really fantastic. Eric Sykes had come on. He'd say, "Good old Eric." Jack Warner had come on, Dixon of Dot Green. When incidentally, my dad was in 15 different Dixon of Dot Greens, playing different villains every time. always villains with a heart of gold. Anyway, so Jack would appear and he'd say, "Good old Jack, look at Jack." And then somebody would come on and he'd go, "Oh, I don't like him. He's horrible." And I'm afraid that he'd be a little bit, how can I put it, a little bit more colourful than that in his language.
Yes.
And then I subsequently would meet them when my working, if I was doing a voiceover with them or even acting with them, and I'd be very wary of them because of his having said that, which makes sense, you know. And I wouldn't reveal that I was my father's son, whereas David Tomlinson, I met subsequently in a recording studio, and I went up to him and said, "Just to say I'm Sam Kidd's son, and I just wanted to say my father was very fond of you." And he actually shed a tear. It was absolutely lovely.
Oh.
He said, "Oh, my goodness, dear Sam, I loved him. I loved him so much. Oh, thank you so much for coming over and saying hello." So there was a great deal of bonhomie everybody, he was a much loved actor, and he was much loved in the profession for this period as well. So for me, this has actually been a fantastic journey of discovery of him as well via his letters and his masses of unbelievable number of press cutting. When he started becoming famous, he was with a press cutting bureau who just sent all the stuff in, everything he was in. And I'm having to add this to stuff that I didn't realize, because as I say, there was a sparseness about the autobiography as well, which I've actually just made bigger and bigger, and with stories, with relevant stories. Big friendship with Harry Worth, you know, the Harry Worth, the comedian, big friendship, mate. And I've also got the home movies. He took home movies for about 15 years, my dad, and I've got all of that. And Harry Worth's in that. Eric Sykes is in that. Hattie Jakes is in that. You just go, oh, the abundance of material that I've got. I'm thinking if I can make a documentary about him as well, that would be wonderful.
I reckon.
I've got 400 of his scripts. You know, I've got the "I'm All Right, Jack" script where he goes, "Why don't you go and photograph something else?" He says. He's the stutterer. He's the stutterer in that. And I didn't realize he wrote all those lines. He wrote them all. This is in the second volume. He wrote all of those lines. He gave them to Roy Bolting, the director, and said, "Can I say this one?" And they went, "No, I don't like that one." "Well, how about this one?" "Yeah, I like that one. We'll have that one in there." And I've got a list of them all written in his handwriting in the script. So this has been such a bizarre experience for me and fantastic for lockdown. I'm asthmatic and I was shielding initially, had no idea what was going on. So I thought, oh, what can I do? Aren't there? I mean, I have to say I was voicing. I've got a little studio at home and I was doing voiceovers. I was playing little characters. I was five characters in a David Walliams book. I couldn't believe I was doing that.
Oh, lovely.
But it's just another thing about my dad was that he was down as being, people thought he was a Cockney, or people thought, and he played lots of Irish characters as well. He in fact was neither of those things. He spoke like me. He'd been to Dunstable Grammar, but he played characters because I never realized he was an impressionist before the Second World War. I had no clue that he was an impressionist. He never told me this. I found this all out. But I knew that he could do masses of different accents because his mother spoke like that, lived in Chiswick, had a little voice like that. And his uncle, bizarrely, his uncle said bizarre things. His uncle was a very posh Belfast man, you know. And his uncle said things like, you'd say, my father would say, did you see me in that series on the box? And he'd say, you know, Sam, I never watched television at all. So he was like that. So he played characters like that all the time, my dad. But also he played Cockneys because he'd spent 5 years in a prison camp with Cockneys. And bizarrely, a lovely thing happened to me. I was in an episode of Minder. And George Cole, who was a friend of my dad, was hiding behind a screen and I did my scene and he came out and said, oh, Jonathan, how lovely to meet you. Your Cockney accent is exactly the same as your father's. How lovely to meet you. So that was a lovely moment. And also another person that my dad was very fond of, George Cole. You know, they worked together. They were in a film originally called Where There's a Will, which was in the 50s, which has appeared a couple of times on Talking Pictures. I mean, Talking Pictures TV has been a kind of godsend for his career because suddenly his career has been reinvented, you know, and they play a Spot Sam Kidd game, which they used to play when he was on every Sunday. You know, people would say, there he is. I bet you Sam Kidd's in this film. You know, and with 290 plus, the chances were that he would have been in the film. And he made some fantastic films in this period. He was in, this is before he became a TV star, of course, even though he was intermittently doing TV because he was in I'm All Right, Jack, Appointment in London, Angels 1-5, Reach for the Sky, They Who Dare, which was a big film. He had a very big part in with Dirk Bogarde, who was a big friend of his during that period. And now, incidentally, is also my godfather, even though I only met him once, never came to the christening. So it wasn't really my godfather, if you know what I mean. But just a friend that he kept working with. About seven pictures with him in a very short period. Blue Lamp, Once a Jolly Swagman, other pictures like that. But it's a mass of fantastic. He was in the very first non-animated Disney, which was Treasure Island, playing Cady, the pirate who gets killed at the beginning by John Gregson. And there's a lovely bit in the book about that. There's a lovely bit in the book about, this is only the first 5 years, Horatio Hornblower with the director Raoul Walsh, who is mad. Apparently, my father kept saying, he's mad, help! And another one, Byron Haskin, as I say, who did Treasure Island, who my dad thought was wonderful. He'd done the special effects for War of the Worlds. And Michael Powell, the great Michael Powell, who my father didn't like at all. And it's in the book. There's one episode where he's quite happy to say he didn't like working with him because Michael Powell tells him off for not being very good. And that's in the book. And there are these lovely moments where he's worked with fantastic. Lewis Milestone, All Quiet on the Western Front, works with him as well. Big part, big scene, big scenes. And Lewis Milestone just kept changing the script and saying, Sam is Russian, apparently. Sam, you can play that part. You have that line now. No, I give that line to someone else. No, I've changed my mind. No, somebody else say that line. So it was slightly desperate when they were trying to act, all the actors trying to act, not knowing who was saying what, because Millie, as they called him, kept giving them different lines all the time. But all of that is conveyed in the book. It's a lovely document of a particular period when he first started acting, where his mother in particular is so keen on him not actually being an actor. She said, it's bringing shame upon the family, she said. You're not going to be a success. And his uncle would just say, you will come to nothing. You will become an alcoholic. You should work. He said, you should be an accountant. And of course, and his mother wanted him to work in the Harrods food hall. I think it was mostly so she could get free smoked salmon. That was the impression.
Probably.
But even when he was a success, she said, you can now, you'll have enough money now to open a corner shop. You know, for goodness sake, that was her view somehow, that being an actor was just, oh, You know, it was bringing, as I say, bringing shame upon the family. But this is all in the first 350 pages. And from then on, it evolves in the second and third volumes of him making more of a career of everything. And I've written them all. I'm just, it's a question of working, because I'm publishing it, the question of whether I could put the other volumes out, you know.
Oh, but it's fantastic. So you've done, there are three volumes in total.
No, there are going to be four. I've written three. The third volume finishes in 1970, and then the final one is 70 to 82, and that was when he died. But, to try and convey to people, he was a huge, huge celebrity. I mean, a huge star of the period. But obviously, it's a period from 40 years ago, you know, when he died.
And in 1962 was when you had your acting debut, appearing with him in the movie The Iron Maiden.
Oh, you spoil me. Oh, thank you. Yes, indeed. Yes, I had the wonderful line, "Hello, Dad, Mum's after you." I've remembered that line to this day. Yes, and I had to leave a roller skate on the floor, which he'd fall over and break his leg for the plot, you see. So Michael Craig then had to drive the traction engine. It's the Iron Maiden's about a traction engine called that. And he had to then drive it with the young American lady he'd been rowing with. So they, of course, fall in love. So I was a plot device. Yes. I remember doing that. Yeah.
So you must have been a part of This Is Your Life when he was on television.
Oh, yeah, I was.
Fun.
Yeah.
Was that? I used to love that show. It must have been great fun to be involved.
Yeah, but the trouble, it was great to be involved, but the trouble was it's a show like any other. So all the people my mother wanted to get on, who were his friends, they'd say, "Oh no, we had Eric Sykes on 2 weeks ago. You can't have him."
Oh.
So consequently, there are several people on the show who it never quite worked, that episode, because there were too many people who were his big friends who'd been recently on. He wanted Jimmy Edwards to get on, who was a big mate of his. You know, Jim, who had the big moustache from that period, was another comic. He'd similarly been on about a month before, and they said, "No, we can't have him on." Harry Worth, Harry was on last week.
Oh.
I'm talking about his big mates. They were big mates, all of these people, and so it was a kind of watered down thing. And I remember at the time, even Ken, there was a cricketer called Ken Barrington who played for England, who he was very friendly with, and he wasn't available. So we had Jim Laker, who was a wonderful cricketer, wonderful, but didn't really know my father very well. So it was a kind of compromise, because ultimately it's a television program. You know, they want to make a program so people aren't going to say, "Oh, we've seen Eric Sykes, saw him last week." You know,
yeah.
So it was, I remember at the time thinking, there was one man on This Is Your Life, my father, who said, "Oh yes, I was at school with him. Yes, we knew that he'd be an actor. He was so funny." And my father said to me, "I don't know who that bloke is. I've never seen him before in my life." and also they got the reverend in who'd christened me. And I didn't understand what that was all about, who apparently had persuaded him early on in his career to keep going as an actor. But I thought, this is bizarre that they've got this man in as well. I didn't like him very much. He was occasionally came round to the family house and lectured me theologically about what I should be doing with my life. I didn't like him very much. And there he was on This Is Your Life. And I think they were just filling in with people who were essentially... Yeah. Just to make the show work, you know. And he'd written, this was actually at the time that his book, For You, The War Is Over, was out. And so they got a lot of prisoners of war friends in. I didn't begrudge them that at all, because they were very much a part of his life, and they had meetings every year. They kept very friendly, and they were his big pals. But I felt I'd love to have said to you, "God, it was great. This Is Your Life was fantastic." But I've been a bit miserable about it. But because it was, as I say, it was just a program ultimately.
Yeah. I just have to say quickly, I've had a message from Julie, who says, "Sam Kidd worked with my mum, Jeanette Hutchinson, who played Mary Dixon, Dixon's daughter, in Dixon of Dock Green."
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic connection.
Yeah.
What was it? Was she Mary Hutchinson, did you say?
Jeanette Hutchinson was her name.
The mother was Jeanette.
Oh, sorry, Jeanette Hutchinson. She played Mary Dixon.
Mary Dixon. Oh, I see. Right. I'll look her up.
Yeah, Julie sent the message.
I wonder what episode it was. I wonder what the character was. Because as I say, he was in 15 separate episodes.
Yeah.
I know that because, as I said, because Jack Warner was a big mate of his. They went back to the very first film my father made, which was Captive Heart in 1945, when my father applied for a newspaper advertisement to be a technical advisor on the film, as well as possibly playing a role. And it was set in a prison camp. So we went back to Germany 3 years after escaping, because he escaped, 3 years, talking 3 years, 3 months after escaping. He was back in Germany working on a film. And his mother thought he was absolutely bonkers for going back, because she said, well, you just spent the last 5 years there. You said you never wanted to go back there. But he went in to do this film, and it was the start of his film career, because they gave him many lines in it. He's got about 10 lines and plays one of the characters. And he started off just as an advisor. But Jack Warner was one of the stars of the films, and they started off their friendship. Another actor in with was Jimmy Hanley, and they became big mates as well as a consequence of that. So, but that's I don't know if anybody wants to see that, for 1946 film directed by Basil Dearden. It really is a fantastic film. You know, I can say that without being biased. It's a terrific film, Michael Redgrave. It really is. I don't feel see my dad flitting in and out of it, but as a film, it's a beautifully written, really worth terrific. Of its genre, a British war film, absolutely fantastic.
Well, I hope you'll get the link if I say that it's been excelente to chat with you.
I'm sorry, I have to correct your pronunciation. It was excelente, actually, when I did it. Thank you, because of course, that was the Ferrero Rocher commercial that I voiced. Yes, I luckily have a career as a voiceover and a voice actor. I've done over 50 video games, including all the Harry Potters. I played Peeves the Ghost. Potter, where are you? I played Hagrid. And, hello, Harry, how you doing? I played lots of Death Eaters. Potter, put down that wand. And a variety of other characters in that. I've been in Toy Story. I was in Toy Story That Time Forgot, playing a dinosaur. The armourer, Ragon. And I've got a little model. I've got a little rather nice model of myself played in that. And did Mr. Bean last year, played about 30 characters.
Lots of little boys, you know. Hello, Mr. Bean, where I went that way.
And I was in Noddy Toyland Detective, playing Big Ears and various other characters in that. So I've got a healthy voice career,
yes.
And I do lots of commercials and lots of very straight reads. I've done I do Airport Security, which is a documentary series, and if you know that's the kind of voice is it for carrying 450 kilograms of cocaine, he will be sentenced to 15 years in prison. It's that kind of thing. And
brilliant.
You know, it's that kind of that I've kept managed to keep going during lockdown, because I've got a little studio.
Yeah.
But it's a nice world. Actually, I'm currently directing on Zoom, The World We Inhabit Now, a charity version of Christmas Carol, and that's going to be on YouTube. It's got some really excellent actors in it: Nicholas Leprovost and Richard O'Callaghan and Anna Carteret, who used to be Juliet Bravo. I'm directing that at the moment, which is fun.
Wonderful.
And I do Chelsea football podcasts called the Chelsea Fancast. Do that twice a week. So,
busy.
Oh, what? Hey, no, there's even more. I can tell you. There's even more I can tell you, but I won't. That would be showing.
We haven't got time, sadly, but it's been
rightly so.
It's been an absolute joy to have you with us on the show, though, you and all your voices. It's been brilliant.
Very much.
And people want to get a copy of the first instalment of your father's memoirs, it's called Sam Kidd, The Unpublished Memoirs, Volume 1. That's right, isn't it?
It's called Be a Good Boy, Sam. Yes, that's the
official title.
Yeah. Be a Good Boy, Sam.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It's on Amazon.
Thank you. We'll have it on our website as well, so listeners can get a copy
from
there.
Thank you so much. That'd be great.
It's by Jonathan Kidd, who we've been chatting to today. Jonathan, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Hannah. It's been lovely to have me on. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. and we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.